The Red Eye Radio Podcast is a service of Freightliner and Detroit.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
Hello and welcome. He is Gary McNamara, and I am Acting Communications Director Eric Harley. It is the Thursday show. Hey, welcome to March.
We're to March already, and just so you know, breaking news here, we have found the collusion.
Yeah.
This just in, breaking news, we have found the collusion. This is a very, very little reported story from yesterday. We're very surprised at this.
The media is burying the story.
They're burying the story of the true collusion.
They are.
Call it the Crocodile Dundee collusion.
Oh, let's go down under, huh?
The Federal Election Commission fined Bernie Sanders' presidential campaign $15,000 for accepting illegal in-kind foreign contributions from the Australian Labor Party.
That's it. We need to do the election over.
During the 2016 elections.
I wonder what the timeline was. Do we know when it was? If it was during the primary?
Well, the ruling stems from a February 16 Project Veritas video showing Australian nationals working for the Sanders campaign on the dime of the Australian taxpayer-funded Australian Labor Party. So Australians were attempting, the Bernie Sanders campaign was colluding with Australians to change the outcome of the election.
Yes. If Steve Irwin were alive today, God rest his soul, he'd probably say that Bernie Sanders is a bit grumpy. Crocky. He's a bit grumpy.
Republican and former New Hampshire House Speaker William O'Brien filed a complaint with the FEC shortly after Project Veritas made the footage public, alleging that the ALP had made prohibited foreign contributions to the Sanders campaign. Mm. The FEC levied the fine against the Sanders campaign in the February 2016 issued agreement.
Project Veritas has found more than Robert Mueller. Discuss. In terms of election collusion and working with foreign governments.
Project Veritas,
one, Robert Mueller, zero. Unless he happens to be paying attention to the news, you know, like the Nunes memo and the Senate criminal referral and all of that. And then he could also find collusion with the other Democrat and Hillary. So let's see if Mueller will find that. Wouldn't that be funny? He comes out. Oh no, I didn't see that. I didn't know about that. Why didn't anybody tell me about that?
I did see. I did see Nunes part of video of him on with, and I'll find it here coming up here in a little bit, on with Fox and Friends, where he did make the same analogy basically that we made, that it was the Democrats colluding with the Russians.
Oh, yeah. Right.
And that's the, you know, that is the entire key. You know, I saw part of the interview with Ken Starr yesterday with Chris Cuomo on CNN. And, you know, you could tell Cuomo was getting, you know, but what if this happened? And what if Kushner took money from other governments? He goes, well, yeah, everything's a possibility. But after, you know, after 14 months, there is no direct ties that the president, you know, colluded with the Russians to change the outcome of the election. He goes, now there may be something out there that nobody knows, but from what we know, there's nothing. And I wanted him then to say the only collusion right to Chris Cuomo, because you would send Cuomo, he would have a coronary. Chris, the only collusion, the only evidence showing collusion that everybody agrees on the facts, maybe except you, because nobody has confronted you with this yet, Chris Cuomo, that it is the Hillary campaign colluded with the Russians by paying for unverifiable dirt on Donald Trump in order to change the outcome of the election. Go ahead, Chris. It's so easy, and as we have said, why Don't Republicans do it? So we'll get to that coming up here in a little bit. The question out yesterday after the president had the bipartisan meeting with lawmakers, is the president a gun grabber?
Well, due process second.
I will say this, though. When I saw all this yesterday, I laughed. And why did I laugh? Not because I would want government to do that, but I remember when he said to the Democrats, I'll sign whatever you give me.
Mm-hmm.
And that wasn't the case. He changed it the next day. Mm-hmm. I guess the point is, will he completely change his mind tomorrow?
Well, he doesn't have any. He doesn't, in terms of throwing due process to the side, he really doesn't, you know, have a choice. But you mean, like, verbally, is he going to have to come out and
verbally
correct
is he,
this?
Right, verbally, is he going to come out and be completely different? Look, you know, Hope Hicks is gone. That was a big story,
mm-hmm.
you know, yesterday. But let's be honest. You know, the president has accomplished things that I didn't think he could accomplish. His communications suck.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so that's why whenever he says, the reason I can say his communication sucks is whenever he says something the first time, we all say, is this what he really means? Or will he change his mind completely tomorrow?
Well, I think we talked about it, not just the, you know, White House spokesperson, but communications director position at the White House right now has just got to be insane, because you're out saying one thing. You might be, you know, on television or in front of the media, you know, in the press room or something, saying one thing, and the president might be down the hall tweeting something different. And then he has to kind of walk it back or change it or say, no, that's not the case or whatever it is. But he kind of tried to walk it back in the same statement in terms of the whole due process second with gun grabbing. You know, he doesn't want to trample on anybody's rights. He went on to say that. And it was like, yeah, but... You know, you're trying to throw out the court process.
Oh, wait a minute. The due process is the right.
That's the whole point. Because he said, you know, the court and all, and it just takes to, he was trying to walk it back almost. Well, it was immediately. It was right there. He's trying to walk that back. So that tells you. Well, he's had five communications directors. Obama had five in 8 years. So when you look at something, you know, like that, it tells you that it's probably a tough job, and it's. But then again, Hope Hicks admitted, according to sources, to telling white lies.
Well, and then as the Wall Street Journal broke it down, and then the criticism coming from Republicans saying that the Democrats misconstrued that completely.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of the congressmen on the House Intelligence Committee, I don't have his name here at the moment, but since you just brought it up, I don't have the story in front of me.
Mm-hmm.
But he said, look, it was misconstrued.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when they said, you know, have you ever told a lie? And said, well, excuse me, have you ever told a lie? And then it was clarified. You ever told a lie about the, you know, Russian collusion?
Right.
Any time she goes, no, nothing like that. And then as the Wall Street Journal pointed out, what she said were white lies is one time somebody came in and wanted to see the president, and I lied to them about that.
Mm-hmm.
And I spin stories to favor what the administration, you know, we spin stories, you know, favorable to the administration.
Mm-hmm.
And that was her definition of white lies. Nothing to do with collusion. Again, it, you know, her saying that to begin with, you know, and they said the Republicans were said, well, this is very refreshing. You're being honest about, you know, the spin and things that you have done. But the fact is, as we know,
you can't be honest with this administration. You know, I mean, you can't be that forthcoming.
But but every administration lies.
Well, they all spin it. That's their job.
They all spin. Right.
And exactly. This, I mean, you and I both have a lot of friends in the media, and they will ask us, well, you ever have, you know, the spokesperson or any official surrogate from the White House? I don't know why I would do that, because they're going to give you, I mean, basically a prepared statement over and over again. All the answers will come from that prepared statement. So there's not going to be anything that you're going to learn or our audience is going to learn from them being on, you know, and of course they're asleep. Now they go to bed at midnight and get up at 2 because they have to follow the president and get up before he does. But the whole idea is that you want, if you're going to do something like that, you know, certainly you want to grill them. And I know that, you know, TV, the Sunday morning news shows, and they all, you know, have to make the rounds. They all kind of have to do that. But for us, it would have to be something that, you know, I mean, and they're not going to do that. It would have to be one of those honest sit downs, and that's not going to happen. We know that. So, you know, there's no real reason to have them on. Now, if you have an analyst or something, someone from an organization that knows what's going on and they can talk about it, then you can have that on and they can reveal possibly something going on at the White House or wherever it is. But their entire job is to spin. They make prepared statements. End of story. You know? That's what it's about.
Yeah, so that was, you know, to me and you know, it's tough because you look at the mainstream media in a story like this where nobody is talking, you know, directly, and nobody knows the reason but the Wall Street Journal. And I look at has the president gone after the Wall Street Journal? Yeah, but the Wall Street Journal on a lot of articles have defended the president.
Mm-hmm.
And even though they're not huge fans of this president, and as they said, from what all their sources tell them, this has been in the works for a while. She's been wanting to leave.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, you know, whether the white lie statement or whatever was what was the final straw, you know, they're not reporting that. They said basically this has been in the works, you know, for a while. And maybe she just said, look, after that, you know, now it's time for me to, you know, to leave, just because of how the story, whether it was true or not, just by the way the story was spun. It, you know, if it was spun in that direction, as Republicans are charging, and when you read the Wall Street Journal article on it, they're stating, well, no, you know, what she said was, mm-hmm. no, I told a white lie one time when somebody wanted to meet the president. It's like, well, who doesn't? Look, Obama lied about Obamacare for over a year.
Well, it's like Mark Cuban, you know, with the tanking comment.
Yes.
With the Mavericks.
Right.
The other Mark Cuban story, by the way. You can't say it out loud. It's one of those things. Everybody knows you're telling white lies, but you can't say that out loud, and that's the difference. It's also the thing that we talked about, talking to investigators. What did you have for breakfast? Cornflakes? We just witnessed you eating Cheerios.
Okay, you've committed perjury.
You've just lied to investigators. We're taking you in. You know, so that's the whole thing, is that you're not going to win politically in this situation when you're in that position. So
we will get to all that. The Department of Justice looking into possible obstruction of justice against the Oakland mayor who warned illegal immigrant criminals of the ICE raid.
Mm-hmm.
That's really interesting. It's tough to comment on it because I don't know the specifics in the law that they're looking at to state, you know, I haven't heard their explanation as to precisely, you know, how they can prove, you know, the obstruction of justice.
Well, yeah, because there are two different elements in terms of the illegal immigrant population. There's the dangerous criminal element. These are hardened criminals, and we talked about them, and ICE described them in their statement the other day. And then there's the illegals who have also broken the law by crossing the border illegally. So the question is, is it just enough that she knew that they were there, the illegals were there, and she was telling them get out ahead of time? Or are they going to try and make the point that she knew gang members, even gang members, were in, she was aware that gang members are in her jurisdiction, which, you know, could go to another level? So I don't know. Like you said, we haven't seen the charges. We don't know.
Well, and
what they would try to charge.
Obstruction of justice would be, as we have said with the president, when they throw the accusation, you know, he fired the FBI director. That's obstruction of justice. No, it's not, because he has the authority to do that. Obstruction of justice is breaking the law to hide a crime.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have to ask yourself, is the federal government looking at this and saying what she broke the law was she was aiding and abetting fugitives and convicted, you know, fugitives from the law that, mm-hmm. that are, you know, because some of them were, you know, convicted criminals, some charged, but at the point that they're fugitives from the law. And so at that point, she is committing obstruction of justice because she's aiding and abetting them. Is that the road that they're going down?
Notifying someone she knows is participating in criminal behavior and is being sought.
Right. And so that's again, it'll be interesting to see if they pursue that or if it's just a threat that's being out there so other mayors and other local politicians don't do that. We'll get to that. The transracial movement continues on course. We'll tell you about the city that bans distracted walking. Babs back in the news again. This time PETA is upset.
Ah, I told you.
Because she cloned one of her dogs.
Mm-hmm.
We'll get to that here in a little bit.
Sarah McLachlan is also upset, we understand.
I can hear the song. I can hear the song right now. Cloning of dogs, and I can hear that.
Yeah.
I don't even know what that song is from Sarah McLachlan, but it's the one that is in like the 2 or 3 minute
infomercial. I remember you remember me.
Is that what it is?
Yeah,
okay.
Those are the words in the song that play in the commercial.
Okay. All right.
So I don't know the title of the song. I guess it's something like that.
That is the song. Now I remember the lyrics.
Mm-hmm.
Democrats now concerned that if they get power, it will be tough to repeal the tax law.
Mm-hmm.
So just like it's tough for Republicans to get rid of the benefits of Obamacare, well, yeah, we might be able to change some of the stuff in the tax law. You know, we might even be able to increase the corporate tax rate. We can't take away the tax cuts from the individual, though, if they get power. Mm-hmm. So that's a concern. We'll get to that and more, plus all your calls and comments. If you would like to get in, lines are open, 866-90-RED-EYE.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Coming up, we will get into the little bit of the discussion on the substance of what was talked about yesterday at that bipartisan meeting of Democrats and Republicans and the president on what they should do concerning gun laws. And as you and I had the discussion, we said, well, wait a minute. The stuff that they were talking about, actually, the vast majority of it did not apply to what actually happened in Florida.
Mm.
And we'll get to the specifics of that coming up here in just a little bit. So what else is going on?
I was telling you the speech, the eulogy that the president delivered for Billy Graham.
Mm-hmm.
I watched that live. It was very moving. I mean, just the somber tone of a moment like that, but I thought the president did a really good job. You know, the speech was well written, and I thought well delivered. I thought it was well done. A perfect tone throughout, but well done. Very sad moment, you know, for all of us growing up watching Billy Graham,
mm-hmm.
you know, where, you know, basically the nation is saying its final goodbyes. You know, everything just kind of goes back in your memory to watching those moments. But watching those moments as they related to my family, you know, that was the whole thing, is that when we sat down in front of the TV, you know, we were all there. It was like being in church, you know.
Yeah, it was.
It was a big deal.
It really was. I'm still getting a response on all social media concerning his death.
Yeah.
A week later.
Wow. Here's your forecast.
Weather concerns today continue to focus on the lower Mississippi and Tennessee River valleys as more rain is forecast, which of course is going to not help the flooding situation in that neck of the woods. There's a severe weather risk in portions of the southern plains and lower Mississippi Valley. The primary threat would be damaging winds, possible tornadoes in that region as well. Several days of elevated to critical fire weather is expected in the southern plains. As we move into late Thursday night into Friday, look for New York, New Jersey, areas of the northeast to be in for a nasty storm. The prediction as that system moves from the south into the northeast and clashes with cold air out of Canada, we'll see rain possibly transitioning to snow, heavy at times. If you have travel plans later tonight into Friday in the Northeast, you'll want to stay aware of that system. And there is a look at your national weather forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Thanks so much, John. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Our app is Apptastic on the App Store and Google Play. Download and listen over and over and over. Red Eye Radio.
And he is Eric Hurley, and I'm Gary McNamara. So I guess now with the push, it seems, to have nobody under 21 being able to own a firearm, I guess the push to lower the voting age to 16, that has now been put on the back burner. Or should we now raise the voting age to 21? Because if you cannot be, if an entire group of people, demographic, must be removed from owning a firearm, can we trust them to make a solid judgment when it comes to the polls? Can we also trust them when it comes to automobiles? Remember, the biggest killer of people in that age group is automobile accidents.
Mm-hmm.
And the percentage is much greater than other demographics as you get older. So it shows that as you become more experienced, as you become older, you are a better driver. So should we take the number one killer of young people, take the ability of young people in essence to cause accidents? Should we take it away from them? If they can't be trusted, what we're saying is people over 21 can be trusted with firearms. People under 21 cannot. So let's look at the biggest killer of those under 21, which is automobiles. Is it time to take automobiles away from them if the object is to save lives?
I think so. Let's move it to 25 just to make it even, just to make it, in the safe. Because when you look at insurance companies and where the rates change, you know, they have all the stats. So
right.
Let's do that.
Is it still 25? I guess it is still 25.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The other thing I want to bring up is some of the discussion that was held yesterday and the points of the president, after the vice president was talking about, you know, what you'd have to do with due process. And mm-hmm. the president came out, and I'm paraphrasing here, but it's close to the quote, where he said, basically take the gun away first, due process later. And everybody went, whoa. And then we talk about a lot of the things that was talked about yesterday. And I guess one of our points is, does it really matter? Because there were a ton of laws in effect. Does that actually apply to what happened here in Florida? City Journal, they do a great job. And Max Eden wrote this yesterday or 2 days ago. How did the Parkland shooter slip through the cracks? And brings up exactly what we brought up. And we brought this up when these programs were being talked about. You know, we had brought this up, and we got a little bit of response, but not a lot of response, because the left loves this. But people just said, well, we'll see how it works. And we said, well, it's not going to work, because what you're trying to do in the form of being equal is you're just pretending something doesn't exist. And this is, as he writes here, in an effort to combat the school-to-prison pipeline, schools across the country have come under pressure from the federal government during the Obama administration and civil rights activists to reduce suspensions, expulsions, and in-school arrests, the unintended consequences of pressuring schools to produce ever lower discipline statistics deserve much more examination. Florida's Broward County, home to Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High, was among the leaders in this nationwide policy shift. According to the Washington Post reporting, Broward County schools once recorded more in-school arrests than any other Florida district. But in 2013, the school board and the sheriff's office agreed on a new policy to discontinue police referrals for a dozen infractions ranging from drug use to assault. The number of school-based arrests plummeted by 63%. The Obama administration lauded Broward's reform and in 2015 invited the district superintendent to the White House for an event, Rethink Discipline, that would highlight the success of Broward, another locality's success in transforming policies and school climate. Confessed killer Nicholas Cruz, a notorious and emotionally disturbed student, was suspended from the high school. He was even expelled for bringing weapons to school, yet he was never arrested before the shooting. In a county less devoted to undoing a school disciplinary policies, perhaps Cruz would have been arrested for one of his many violent or threatening incidents. When Cruz got into a fight in September of 2016, He was referred to social workers rather than the police. When he allegedly assaulted a student in January of 2017, it triggered a school-based threat assessment, but no police involvement. The Washington Post notes that Cruz was well known to school and mental health authorities and was entrenched in the process for getting students help rather than referring them to law enforcement. Would an arrest record have changed the judgment of the FBI agents who ignored the tip that Cruz wanted to kill his classmates? Certainly, Cruz could not have legally purchased a gun if the 2016 Social Services investigation determined that he was a threat to himself or others. My point is, it already technically exists where you don't have to go to court, especially if you're that age, that if the Social Services investigation, if it determined you were a threat to yourself or others because you're under the age of 21 and still in the school system, boom.
Mm-hmm.
That would be in effect right there. That year, according to the Washington Post, the sheriff's office was informed that Cruz planned to shoot up the school. The office determined that Cruz had knives and a BB gun and sent this information to the school resource officer. It's unclear whether the school resource officer investigated. If they did, no one evidently filed a report. When Social Services approached Scott Peterson in its investigation of Cruz, the officer refused to share any information regarding an incident that took place. Peterson and his colleagues appear to have been under pressure to post lower statistics on school safety problems. This climate of disengagement could have allowed Cruz to slip through the cracks of the system. And he brought up how even, you know, Jake Tapper was going after Scott, you know, Israel for that. And Israel said, well, we only know what we know. Well, but if you agreed with the policy of the school to keep this information away from you, then you are part of the problem because you made the deal that when the law is broken, well, we're not going to consider it. We're not really going to look at it as law being broken. We're just going to consider it, you know, as a violation of school policy, and therefore you're not as much on the radar. So you can have all the laws if you want, but if you've got the left in this country determined to pretend that things are all fine when they're not.
Well, it's just what you're been going a big push on the left, not even outside schools. We have too many people in prisons. We have, you know, it's disproportionate. All right. Here's the question. Anyone not guilty? The idea of giving, one sentence to a white guy, another sentence to a black guy for the same crime. Okay. Let's look into that. But in terms of just the population inside of a prison or the number of prisons, the number of people in prisons total, all of that's irrelevant. If there's an injustice, great, fix the system. But if they're guilty of breaking the law, if they have been found guilty, then they do the time for it.
You don't enforce the law by saying the statistics aren't right, therefore let's not report law breaking.
Right. Well, because all you're trying to do is essentially paint the outside of the building. Well, if there's a problem inside, then all people are going to see is this nice looking outside of the building. You're not going to see the real picture. And if there's a problem going on, especially in one county where you have a number of students getting in trouble for whatever reason, or at one school district, all right, there's, in fact, that's probably the case with any given city in America, that you have, you know, certain neighborhoods where there's higher crime.
Mm-hmm.
That's not a secret. But this whole grand idea, very liberal idea, of making it all look equal. We need it to be equal. No, we're a nation of laws.
And we read the one article that talked about the equity of arrests.
Right.
We need equity and equality of arrests.
I mean, if we're talking about punishment, you know, the punishment shouldn't be decided, but a lot of times the punishment has to do with the history of the individual.
Law enforcement is based on the individual occurrence. That's how. And it, we have said
at
this,
least it was up until now.
Yeah, we have said this. If you want to solve the problem, what you do is you follow the law, and on one side you follow the law and you prosecute it based on the incident, and the due process is also, you know, in every incident, due process should be acknowledged across the board, but every case is individual. You cannot make an assumption and state, as the left wishes to do in this country and the Obama administration promoted, which is, we know law enforcement is good if we fudge the statistics. Mm-hmm. If we pretend what is happening isn't happening, then all is okay in our mind. It gets back to what we have said before about what is important to the left, the imagery and symbolism that everything is okay, even if it isn't.
Right.
Let's not actually confront the problems that exist out there. Let's pretend that they don't exist. We said, when, you know, back a few years ago, when these programs were being introduced, we said there's going to be problems here. Now everybody is looking at this saying, oops, maybe we did the wrong thing. Yes, because when you wish to live in a pretend society, this is what is, this can be the result of it. Things like this then will be missed. Why will they be missed? Because they're intentionally being missed. It's not an accident. It's
they're looking
that,
away. They're, right, they're, this right. is a number of people working together to make sure that the people, the citizens, are not safe. It's the same as sanctuary city policy.
Mm-hmm. Great. I was thinking the same thing.
Making sure, because here's the concern. If that individual, a student in this case, is dangerous inside schools, how is he not dangerous outside of schools? It's the reason you enforce the law, not only to punish the individual that's responsible, but also to keep the public safe. That includes those students in that share the hallways with that student and anybody that he might encounter.
If you'd like to get in, we do have a line open, 866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Carley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Let's go to John in Montgomery, Alabama. John, hi. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome. Hi, John.
Yes, sir. Thank you. You want me to get to my point?
Well, yes, go ahead. Go ahead. Why nice. Not? Yes, that'd be nice.
Yes, sir. It's been reported, I believe I've heard it reported, Donald Trump, and I'm paraphrasing, said that if a person should not have a gun, that you take away the gun and then give them their due process later. And everybody seems to be up in arms about that. How is that any different? In my opinion, it's not. If a person is suspected of a crime, their liberty is taken away and the due process is worried about later.
No, the due process, part of that due process is detention of the individual because you're keeping the public safe.
Right. Your liberty is taken away. The detention of the individual.
But the liberty of the liberty of the liberty of the public or the safety of the public is first. And that's part of due process.
But the due process is going before a judge. Yeah. You're arraigned. When you're arrested, that's where the due process is going before the judge.
Mm-hmm. It's all part of it.
Right. So you're arrested by the police,
yes,
but then you're
and your liberty is taken away.
Right. But your liberty is taken away. But the due process is seeing that judge ASAP. And that's where your due process comes in. So when the president says without due process, people are like, what? Because what that means is then the government. Now, for this kid, look, under the age of. The reason they say under the age of 21 is because under the age of 21, you're still not an adult in this nation. Over 21 you are. That's why you couldn't restrict the gun laws or whatever till age 25. Insurance companies may be able to charge you a higher rate, but the government can't, because under 21 you're still considered legally a child in this country, so you can treat them differently, and so the same due process rights don't necessarily apply or the same laws don't necessarily apply. And so if they wish, if you're in, you know, the CPS, as he was being reported, even though he was 19 years of age, at that point, they could have taken, they could have reported him and said, look, he's a danger to himself and shouldn't have a gun. It's tougher when you get to be the age of an adult to say legally due process doesn't matter. Right. The courts would look at that in a different way.
But that detention, all of that is part of due process. That's
right.
Part of
it. Well, the judge being involved in it, that's mm-hmm. the whole point. Mm-hmm. The judge being involved is where you start getting your due process.
Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it's not the same. I know you want to try and equate that, but it's not the same.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. I'm Gary McNamara along with Eric Harley.
This hour for Freightliner, run smart. Helping you run more efficiently is Freightliner's number one goal.
Okay, I want to play this audio cut from President Trump yesterday addressing Joe Manchin and Pat Toomey on their background check bill that it doesn't go far enough. And why? Well, you hear it coming up here.
You can't buy a handgun at 18, 19, or 20. You have to wait till you're 21. But you can buy the gun, the weapon used in this horrible shooting at 18. You are going to decide. The people in this room pretty much are going to decide. But I would give very serious thought to it. I can say that the NRA is opposed to it. And I'm a fan of the NRA. I mean, there's no bigger fan. I'm a big fan of the NRA. They want to do it. These are great people. These are great patriots. They love our country. But that doesn't mean we have to agree on everything. It doesn't make sense that I have to wait till I'm 21 to get a handgun, but I can get this weapon at 18. I don't know. So I was just curious as to what you did in your bill.
We didn't address it, Mr. President. Look, I think
why? Because you're afraid of the NRA, right?
No, not an issue.
And they shook. They said, no, we're not. And smiled. Actually, started laughing when he said that. And last hour we talked about the substance. We will talk about the substance of where the president's going here. And you don't know. I mean, I saw this yesterday, and I said, I don't know where it's going, because I don't. Last time, remember when he sat there and said, "Whatever you people send me, I'm going to sign." And you and I both said, "No, he's not." So I don't know what the pressure is going to be on the president, because remember, this is also about in my humble opinion, where the polls lead. But I will say this: this is just a political statement, not a issue of substance or Second Amendment or anything. And you had mentioned earlier,
what's that? Which statement is that? What do you mean? The statement by the president?
What? I'm not sure where you're going.
You said it's not about the Second Amendment. It's just a political statement.
No, I'm giving you this is a political statement on what happened yesterday, not on the substance. The Second Amendment or assault weapons or background checks or anything, just on the politics of it. And I didn't see it. I didn't see his remarks about Billy Graham, and you said they were really, really good.
Mm-hmm.
Politically, what happened yesterday, after they went through the entire day, Democrats have to be absolutely freaking out. Why? Because there is the president talking about the issue of the day with both Democrats and Republicans, who are all talking to him in an extremely respectful way.
Hmm.
He came across as extremely presidential yesterday as he held court with both Democrat and Republican, bipartisan, not just leaders, but other members of of Congress. And when I saw it, I went, whoa, they can't be happy at all, because he came across as a leader, as a president, whether you agree with it or we're not. Again, that's why we're not talking about the substance. I'm talking about just the imagery of it. And believe me, with 2018 right around the corner, I can tell you the Democrats at the end of the day looked at yesterday and said, you know, as the media is talking about, this is a horrible day. His White House is falling apart with the whole Hope Hicks resignation, which it isn't falling apart because she has resigned. But that's what they were attempting to portray. Well, when you see the president, as a lot of Americans did yesterday, he came across as very presidential. So I would disagree with the press's analysis of the president's week politically, that it's been a horrible week for him, which it has not been.
No, I don't think so at all. Look, he had to walk back that statement about, you know, setting due process aside immediately. He did that. He walked that back. That's not something we want any president to say. That's very, very dangerous when you start talking that way. Because if you want to go through and change the process, that's one thing, which, of course, is the president's not in a position to change that process. There are, I guess, a couple of things he could do administratively, but in terms of the court process, he's not in charge of changing that. But saying that gets a lot of us conservatives, especially gun owners, you're going to catch my ear when you say that.
Yeah, you're going to catch their ears. And as we were having a discussion during our pre-show meeting, if you want to hear the F word.
No, I said, here's what I said. Congratulations, Mr. Trump. You're a fascist.
Right. So if you continue on that, then that will start coming from the
when
right.
When you start taking action on that, because, again, right, these are just words. And this is a guy who throws out words, you know, like he throws out money. Mm-hmm. People don't know this. He just throws money everywhere. Everywhere he walks, it's just money. It's like a money trail behind him. But he's not very careful sometimes with his words. You have to be very careful with your words in terms of the Second Amendment. Right.
The Fourth Amendment, you don't.
No. And the Fifth Amendment, you don't even have to say anything. We don't even have to say anything about the Fifth Amendment.
By the way, you had to be listening to yesterday's show, because we did a Fourth Amendment show yesterday about how, you know, everybody cares about the Second Amendment, but the Fourth Amendment, no problem. Yeah. Let the government monitor whatever we do. That's fine and dandy.
Yeah.
But that was yesterday's show. But, yeah, and so if you don't want to hear the F word coming from the right, you better watch out saying statements like that, because when you say without due process, you want to talk about something that will ring a bell, mm-hmm, and light a fire, mm-hmm, in most conservatives. It's that.
Yep. Absolutely. There's due process for a reason.
Especially when the vice president made sure to talk about due process,
mm-hmm,
and then the president reverses it and then again has to walk it back. But as I've said, again, with this president, you just have no idea what he will say within a group of people in public now with the cameras on, as we saw, remember, with the bipartisan tax talk.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever you send me, you and I came in that night saying, this is never going to happen. And
then the next morning, No. I meant whatever you send me, which includes funding for the wall.
Right.
You know,
we remember everybody was up in arms that night, and we just went, this isn't going to happen. This is not. So with Gunzo, I don't know. I don't honestly know where the president stands specifically on guns. I don't know what he would sign and what he doesn't. And that's really the great unknown. When it eventually came to taxes, you and I sort of knew where he stood on it. I don't know. I don't honestly know where the president stands when it comes to guns, how far he would go with gun control. That I don't know. So that is a concern. I understand that he even caught himself, as you said, walking back, you know, that he had to walk back the statement on the whole due process thing,
mm-hmm, right,
a bit, because that just came out wrong. But I don't know what this president would sign.
Well,
if the Democrats were in power, I don't know. If the Democrats are in power and head Congress, I don't know what this president would sign.
Here are his quotes that really caught my ear. Take the guns first, go through due process second.
Yes.
I like taking the guns early, like in this crazy man's case that just took place in Florida. To go to court would have taken a long time. He went on to say, allow due process so no one's rights are trampled. Well, this is where he started walking it back. But the ability to go to court, obtain an order, and then collect not only the firearms, but any weapons.
But you can't have it both ways.
He's spelling out due process there.
You can't take away due process and protect everybody's rights.
Take the firearms, the VP, addressing the
right.
VP. Or, Mike, take the firearms first and then go to court. I'm sorry. That second walking back, that second part of the statement was Vice President Pence saying allow due process. And that's where the president was responding him saying, or, Mike, take the firearms first, then go to court. So, and the last caller, if you didn't hear him, was trying to make the compare the two of arresting someone, detaining someone, taking their liberty, so they don't have the liberty, you don't have the, you know, once you're detained, you don't have the liberty of, you know, your liberty is taken, you can't just walk out. But it depends on the nature of the crime. That detention, even if a brief period, sometimes you can go free in the middle of the night and then have to appear before a judge, or sometimes it goes before a judge first thing in the morning or whatever it might be. But that's all part of due process.
Right. The judge is the last caller seemed to miss that the judge is the key piece of getting the due process because the judge is the person who is neutral in it all.
Right,
the judge
is
not a part of the prosecution or the defense. And so the judge is involved, and therefore, and I think the last caller forgot about that portion of it, but it's just not the police arresting you and taking away, you know, your freedom. But the due process comes in immediately, number one, in reading your Miranda rights, then contacting the courts. So then the judge sees you, you know, ASAP, and then at that point you're in the
right to an attorney, all of that.
The right to an attorney, exactly.
You still have all of those rights still remain.
Right.
And so the question is, okay, now we talk about something. Now, if we talk about the Cruz, the shooter, and the story that came out that he put a gun to someone's head. Well, that's a crime. You can't do that. That gun was used in the commission of a crime. Now, I don't know if it was that same gun that he used on February 14th. That I don't know. But nonetheless, in that case, authorities at that point, had he been arrested for that, then they would have taken him in and that gun would have been confiscated. Now, again, that's all part of due process, but this policy in Florida of looking away and basically putting a blanket over, a tarp over due process. If you think about it, I mean, it was going out of your way to make sure that those, well, in this case, someone who may have committed crimes was not going to be charged with crimes. It was not going to rise to that level. It was going to be, well, dismissed and buried.
And the one point is whether he should have had an arrest already on his record, which may have kept him from being able to get a gun. And the second point is the CPS evaluation of him, because he was referred to CPS because he was still in high school. And if they had said he was a danger to himself, then under Florida law, he could not have gotten a gun to begin with.
Right.
Because he is under child, you know, protected services, he was in the, you know, that particular system, and one of the reasons he was, you know, in that system was because he was still technically in high school, even though he was in a high school for troubled kids, even at his age. And so, you look at it and you say, when the president came out and said, well, look at him, he shouldn't have been able to buy it. Yeah, but the system already existed, Mr. President, that should have kept him from doing it. Another law that would be redundant to the laws that already exist would not have solved that problem.
Yeah, you know, there's the whole thing is that every time in the wake of such an event, we look to create a number of new laws that we think would have worked, while we disregard the laws that are on the books that, in this case, should have been enforced time and time again. But you know what? This is, as long as we tolerate things like sanctuary city policies, protecting very dangerous people, then don't expect any of this to ever change.
Yeah. The Democrats are blunt in it. We want to fudge the statistics. We want to pretend that criminal illegal immigrants don't exist. We want to give them freedom over the safety and security of Americans. That's why I said from the very beginning, Democrats have no moral high road on this at all.
None.
Democrats really can't be talking. As long as Democrats continue to be for sanctuary cities and protecting convicted.
Yes.
Not just charged, but convicted illegal immigrant criminals, and their safety is more important than the security and safety of American citizens, then you can't talk about gun control.
No.
As long as you wish to hide and pretend that the criminal activity happening in high schools really isn't happening, you don't have a place at the table.
No, you don't.
Tell us where we're wrong.
You want the world to appear to be a nicer place. Well, reality doesn't care what you want it to look like.
If you want to get in, we do have a line open, 866-90-RED-EYE.
Freightliner's Team Run Smart has grown into a community of around 50,000 drivers and members sharing helpful information on trucking. Team Run Smart Pro Jimmy Navarez tells us about what he shares through his blogs and communications.
Some of the things we've talked about lately are outside of the business smart realm. One of my most recent one was about the new light test switch. It's a new feature on the new truck where you can push a button and have your lights turn on and recycle through during the pre-trip. That's something new on this 2018 that I really like. I like to blog a lot about making sure you're financially ready to be a truck driver, how to approach being an owner-operator as a business. It's really important to approach it as a business, monitor and manage it like a business, keep the spreadsheets, keep the numbers, and if you're not able to, or you feel like you want to take that step and have someone else do it for you, then partner with someone. ATBS is one of the tax and bookkeeping services that help us with our website at Team Run Smart, so that's one that we recommend if you want to have someone go and do that for you. Take that back office leg off of you, that we do that as well, just to be smart about it.
For more, log on to teamrunsmart.com. Meritor's Driver Report, brought to you by TA Truck Service Road Squad. If you break down, we show up. 800-924-SHOP.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. If you would like to get in, let's go to Marty in West Palm Beach, Florida. Marty, you're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show. Hi.
A pleasure listening to your show. First of all, I know this was a while ago, but the wacko policy of not reporting the stuff to the police is called restorative justice. They're also doing it in Jacksonville. I'm from St. Augustine, but I'm visiting down in South Florida. And I looked up, and West Palm Beach is a sanctuary city. And what I was mentioning to your screener before is, it looks to me like we're having a new civil war where these cities are seceding from the Union instead of the states. And for example, in West Palm Beach and in Oakland, California, where the mayor warned the illegals that ICE is going to be coming to get you. Mm-hmm. That's an insurrection. And I don't know what's going to happen, but I think it's disgusting. There is no more law and order. And I know that when I come down to South Florida, originally I'm from New York, they don't bother me. but the South Florida is turning into the West Indies and Caribbean. It's unbelievable what's happening down here. So I could just imagine how many illegals are over here. But then again, the people in the gated communities, they need their cheap labor. They need their gardeners, and they need the people to be nannies, whatever. I think it's disgusting.
Well, look, thank you very much. But look, we've said this before. You can have labor is going to be a challenge,
right,
in this country, because and by the way, I've got to realize that last time we talked about this, I did miss something. I said, look, we don't have women coming into the workforce by the tens of millions that we had before. We don't have the number one, the birth rate. You've got to realize if we didn't have legalized abortion in this country, we'd have probably 60 to 100 million more people that would be, you know, basically a new growing market that would exist. It would make the, you know, the economy better and would be a labor force out there. Also, all of that is gone. Mm-hmm. And so we're going to have to be concerned about immigration, I believe, in the future when it comes to bringing in people, whether it's, you know, again, just work visas, work permits.
The arena of public opinion. Every night, Red Eye Radio.
And he is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE.
This hour for Freightliner, Run Smart. Helping you run more efficiently is Freightliner's number one goal. Team Run Smart, teamrunsmart.com, is a great website. Go there, as the Team Run Smart pros are blogging from the road, and also sharing and participating in a community of over 50,000 trucking industry professionals. It's a really awesome thing to witness and be a part of. So do just that if you haven't already. Go to teamrunsmart.com, a great website, very helpful, from Freightliner.
Mm-hmm. The Department of Justice is looking into whether Oakland Mayor Libby Schaaf obstructed justice by warning Northern California residents of an impending raid by U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement. The agency's acting director, Thomas Horman, told Fox News on Wednesday that the Department of Justice is reviewing whether Schaaf broke any laws by telling her constituents ICE would be raiding the areas in order to arrest people violating immigration laws. Schaaf, a Democrat, posted the warning to Twitter on Saturday, writing that multiple credible sources told her the immigration agency was preparing to conduct an operation in the Bay Area, including Oakland, starting as soon as Sunday. ICE arrested more than 150 people in violation of U.S. federal immigration laws in San Francisco Bay Area following Schaaf's warning, the agency said on Tuesday. Homan, in a statement, said 864 illegal immigrants and public safety threats remained at large in the community and blamed Schaaf's warning for their ability to dodge arrest. What she did is no better than a gang lookout yelling police when a police cruiser comes in the neighborhood, except she did it to a whole community, he told Fox News. There's over 800 significant public safety threat criminals that we are unable to locate because of that warning, so that community is a lot less safe than it would have been.
Well, we said that from the get-go, just hours after she said that. One of the first things we mentioned was that hardened criminal, dangerous element amongst the illegal immigrant population in her city and others. But in this case, gang members, people who commit violent crimes, got the heads up from the mayor.
And, you know, and so you ask the question, how can you have obstruction of justice? Now, we have gone through obstruction of justice when it comes to, for example, President Trump, when you will have Democrats say, well, he fired Comey, therefore he tried to obstruct justice. No, that's not obstruction of justice. Obstruction of justice, is, for example, what happened, you know, to Nixon. There was a crime. The crime was what? The burglary of the Democratic headquarters. And what did the president then do? The president, they were going to charge him with obstruction of justice because he did what? He destroyed evidence pertinent to He destroyed evidence that he wasn't supposed to destroy. The White House destroyed evidence, you know, concerning the Democratic break-in. So that is breaking the law in order to hide breaking the law.
Yeah, it would have been different if we kind of spelled it out similarly back when the Democrats were making that charge, saying had the president gone into the FBI headquarters and then said that okay, we're going to take all these papers and everything related to the investigation
and destroy them.
Right. Then that would have been obstruction.
Right. Then you would have had obstruction of justice. The interesting thing is you still don't have an underlying crime, though, which still we believe both is necessary. You need to know what the underlying crime is before you obstruct justice. How can you obstruct justice when you don't know what the underlying crime is? when there's no crime that's been identified and there's a prosecutor trying to find evidence to prosecute you on a crime that nobody can define. Normally, the prosecutor knows what the crime is and tries to find evidence of people that were involved in breaking that particular law. Now, here you have a case of you have people that have broken the law, and you have a mayor, and this is what I wonder because they didn't get into the specifics of it. Would the obstruction of justice be aiding and abetting fugitives? Because not only did you have some of the illegal immigrants that were charged with crimes, but you had which then is a fugitive, because you can be a fugitive on the run without being convicted.
Mm-hmm.
But you actually had convicted criminals that were then given a heads up. And it would be interesting because I don't know what the precedent is for a mayor and giving out a warning like this. I would assume that would have to be the path that they were going down. And it would be interesting to see how a jury and how a prosecution and a defense would go in a criminal case like this.
Yeah, because
how they would actually approach it.
It basically would be her, the crime, I guess, would be her notifying someone she knows has broken the law that was also wanted by authorities. That is basically what you have here. So having, you know, the prosecutor would, you know, have to put all that together. It seems on the surface a pretty solid case. But as you mentioned, where's the precedent here of a mayor just making a statement as opposed? Because the statement is directed at those individuals that she knows are within her city. She knows they are fugitives, that they are wanted, that ICE is looking for them, and she knows ICE is coming for them. So you have all the elements there, but again, you know, we'll see if it actually happens. I don't know, again, how you proceed here, but it will be interesting
because we've never seen it happen. And here would be the other problem you might have with obstruction of justice in this particular case. If you had, for example, Nixon, remember, these were people that, even though he didn't know that the original break-in happened, it involved the organization that he was involved in, the political party that he was involved in, and then it was himself and his aides trying to hide, you know, what happened from the prosecution, from the crime that people who work for the political party that technically the president heads. Mm. And so you have a tie-in that the benefit of the break-in was for his personal, you know, the break-in was to gather information, you know, from the Democrats to help Nixon win the next election. Mm-hmm. So the fact that they hit it, there's a direct, as you can see, there's a direct benefit coming out of that crime and out of that conspiracy. In this particular case, what I would wonder is, and I'm not a lawyer, but what I would guess legally in this case is the fact that she's giving out a generalized warning where she is not the immediate beneficiary. Either way, you can't see how personally she is helped, you know, in this conspiracy to help aid and abet. But the other part of the law is you may just be a friend of somebody, but you aid and abet their escape. You may have not gotten anything personal out of it. You can still be charged with aiding and abetting.
Mm-hmm.
That isn't obstruction of justice, though. That's aiding and abetting, you know, a fugitive. And so that would be my question. Would they actually be going after obstruction or aiding and abetting criminals?
Yeah, I wondered about that, too, the nature of the charge, because it is different if you're there is no pending case against her. There's nothing for her to essentially get out of by warning these illegals. But it could be aiding and abetting. I mean, it would. Again, the prosecutor would have to, I guess, decide that.
Let us go to Bobby in New York on gun control. Bobby, hi. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show.
Hey, good morning, guys.
Hey. Hi.
So I'm definitely a strong supporter of the Second Amendment. And in all honesty, I don't think any of the gun control, any new gun control laws that would be passed would prevent, you know, any future school shootings anyway. Because, you know, if there's someone evil enough to want to go out there and hurt that many innocent people, I think they're going to find a way to get their hands on a weapon regardless. It takes a very, very evil person to do something like that. And, you know, there's got to be an extremely strong motive, something in his head telling him that, you know, he really wants to go out there and do all that damage. I feel like, you know, how do you stop that? I don't think a law would stop that. But at the same time, I wouldn't oppose, you know, a couple more regulations, not to any law-abiding citizen, not to anyone who's mentally stable, but maybe have, like, a database for mentally ill people and prevent them. We have the database.
Well, I guess if you look in this case, I mean, if you look in general, you might be able to make that point. But if you look in this case, the systems were all set up. But the systems were purposely ignored. I mean, it was calculated. I mean, the cooperation between the Broward County Schools and the Sheriff's Department not to report certain misdemeanors that happened, from drugs to assault.
That was deliberate.
That was deliberate. That was calculated. That wasn't, well, these are people that just fell. You know, we hear these are people that fell through the, this is an incident that fell through the cracks. And and we're asking, well, it didn't fall through the cracks.
No.
This, from what we know, was calculated. Mm-hmm. This was, okay, we don't really want to report all the crime that happens. And so we're going to call them school infractions, and we're not going to call them crimes. Well, if you don't call them crimes, then people that commit crimes still will be able to get guns, because if they were arrested and or convicted of those crimes, they wouldn't be allowed to have guns, and they would be in the system. But if you're hiding crimes in order to improve the statistics, well, then you're going to make it more readily available, no matter if the infrastructure of laws and policies exist to catch people that may be mentally impaired or criminals or a combination of both. Then you can't get them if nobody decides to actually follow the policies.
Right.
And it's not by accident that they just don't follow the policies or that they're just apathetic. It's the fact that, no, we have this, this is calculated that we don't want to report all the crimes that actually happened.
Who does that hide from the public eye at a higher rate? It's those students that are committing the harshest acts, those acts that do sometimes rise to criminal level. So if you think about that, it's all designed to hide criminals. That's what it is.
Right.
Because if it were just a school fight, well, that's not necessarily criminal in nature. This policy is designed to hide criminals.
So I guess, you know, the analogy would be, if you don't want criminals to get guns, should we be hiding crimes?
There you go.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. I'm Gary McNamara along with Eric Hurley.
This hour for Freightliner, Run Smart, helping you run more efficiently is Freightliner's number one goal.
866-90-RED-EYE if you would like to get in on the show and talking about a variety of things. The president and his bipartisan get-together on gun control and where it may go. And it will be interesting to see how the White House and how the White House responds today to, I'm sure, criticism that will be coming from conservatives.
Mm-hmm.
And the NRA. It did seem like to me, I this is my personal opinion of it, that the president was trying to have it both ways with the NRA. I love them. They're great. They love me. We all love them. I don't agree with them on everything.
Right.
So it's like, well it gets down to, for most people and most lobby groups out there, it is based on, it doesn't matter whether they love you and you love them. It is based on, do you agree with our policy?
It's agenda. That's what
right.
it is. I mean,
of course it is.
And no one tries to hide that. And it's interesting because I also believe that the president, I don't know that he's making it up when he talks about, you know, having the little back and forth with the vice president, on due process. And then he made the point about, being able to buy a gun at a certain age or a certain gun at a certain age and he might be genuine and true on those points, but also know that there's nothing he can do about it, and he'll let Congress handle that. But that's dangerous because do you alienate a part of your base by doing just saying something, because that's how politics works.
Well, by saying something, you give the indication that you won't veto a bill.
Right. If it came across the Democrats win in November, and it came across that you wouldn't stand opposed to it, and that's where the danger lies. He has to know that, regardless of what he really feels, he needs to know that he'll alienate a large portion of his base if they start a gun-grabber policy, at the White House.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Hurley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Hurley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Welcome and good morning. How the heck are you? So glad to have you aboard.
Well, that makes one of us.
Well, you know, one thing here. By the way, on this March 1st.
Yeah.
I just can't believe it's March 1st.
I know, it's crazy.
But here we are to March 1st. And again, so many different topics out there. I want to make sure that we hit this one. This is where the president tweeted out about Jeff Sessions yesterday, his attorney general.
Yeah.
Where the president tweeted out and called the attorney general disgraceful for asking the Justice Department's inspector general to look into possible eavesdropping, abuse by the FBI. It's fascinating because both sides came out. I mean, there are people that hate Jeff Sessions because they believe that Hillary should be in jail now. They believe that the prosecution, should go on. They don't like, what Sessions did with Robert Mueller. Some great points made, though, by a variety of different people. If you want to do something, Wall Street Journal editorial board pointed this out, said, look, appoint somebody in Justice Department to show you, to organize and bring you basically all the classified information that's out there, declassify it. You can stop this yourself. If you're that dissatisfied, publicly berating the person that you chose for the attorney general position isn't going to solve your problem.
No,
it's
not.
Who would be next in line? Rosenstein?
Right.
And, you know, you didn't like Comey, you got Ray. Are you happy?
Mm-hmm.
So, publicly berating the situation isn't going to solve your problem. And by the way, the president, I believe, is completely justified in the fury that he has about what has gone on around him. The president now realizes, think about this. You know, we explained this, you know, over the last week and really since Monday have been pounding this because it's so extremely important that what we found out once the Democrat memo was released is that you had the Democrat Party that, you know, you had the FBI go to a FISA judge and say, we believe the Trump campaign is colluding with the Russians to hack the election. And we found out the only reason that they were going in that direction was because the Democrats and the Hillary campaign colluded with the Russians to get unverifiable dirt on Donald Trump, which then made its way to the law enforcement agencies, which then went to a FISA judge to spy on his campaign. But what came out of all of this, what came out of the effort of the Democrats and the Hillary campaign to collude with the Russians was that he was colluding in the with the Russians. We've talked about this, how bizarre it is, how absurd it is. How would you like to be the president of the United States if you haven't colluded with anybody, any of the Russians, and yet the media has been pounding this for over a year? A special prosecutor, which is unprecedented, has been appointed not to investigate a particular crime, but do a fishing expedition. Tell me the last president that this happened to, where you had a fishing expedition. Tell me where you had a president that was elected, and then you had, again, the opposition campaign that ran against him, colluding with the Russians to put out unverifiable, salacious information on this president, in only, not only to try to destroy his campaign, but after he is elected, to an attempt to delegitimize that election as being a clean election, which all indications are, it was a totally clean election. And everybody's involved in it. The media is pushing that narrative. And then you finally come to the point, as you do last week, where after the Democrat memo, and the president has known this, and he probably knows more than we do, because he has access to all this highly classified information that we don't. And you find out that the people that accused you of colluding with the Russians to destroy an American institution of a presidential election are the ones that actually colluded with the Russians in an attempt to do that. I'd be furious, too.
Yeah. No doubt. No doubt.
And but is the solution to berate your attorney general? Or let me get this here as they write here. Mr. Trump has a point about investigations dragging on without conclusions. But a big reason is that the key government institutions, including the FBI and Justice, had stonewalled efforts to get answers. Yet for some reason, he refuses to use his presidential power to declassify the FISA court and the FBI documents so the public can judge. Instead of whining about Mr. Sessions, Mr. Trump could order him to appoint someone at Justice with the sole responsibility of making public the documents that would give the American people the answers that they deserve. Well, and so I know there's a moment of silence there because you all think about it. You're going, okay, what about that?
You know, there's the president wasn't the first to express his concern over AG Sessions, essentially, you know, not following up, not doing his job, looking into not just the secret court, but what was going on at the FBI. Remember when the Trey Gowdy was one, but members of Congress were asking the FBI to share information. Oversight committees get to see that information, and they couldn't get it. And people were scratching their heads. Where's the AG on this? And the president makes a valid point about the inspector general. Well, the inspector general can do an investigation and write a report, but he has no prosecutorial power. So the question is, what happens from that report if the inspector general does complete one? And why does it require the inspector general? Why not just
right.
do the investigation?
Well, when they call him an Obama guy, as Wall Street Journal pointed out, they said, look, this is the guy that released the scathing report on
right.
Fast and Furious
mm-hmm.
on the Obama Justice Department. And he said, you know, remember, when the FBI couldn't find the 50,000 texts between mm-hmm. Peter Strzok and mm-hmm. Lisa Page, it was Horowitz who stepped up immediately and said, here they are.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And it's like, you know, so you may have an... He might have been appointed by, President Obama.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact is, he always hasn't been necessarily friendly to Obama. And so far, he hasn't actually worked against you.
Right.
Sessions, it's a great unknown because we don't know what Sessions is doing.
No, we don't. And the Obama guy comment to me wasn't very, more important than the idea of the AG leading something, an investigation, so that it could be a quicker road to
prosecution. Yes.
And right. that's because, I'll use the word lollygagging. We don't need any lollygaggers here. We don't need to slow down the process. There are things that we know. It's documented. There are things the public knows about this case.
Well, the two idiots overnight have figured out that it was the Democrats that colluded with the Russians to change the outcome of the election
mm-hmm.
by using unverifiable information to destroy the opposition candidate, who was Donald Trump, and then take that to a FISA court in order to spy on the Trump campaign.
Mm-hmm. I mean, if you think about the...
And by the way, nobody's debating any of those facts.
Right. No, they're not. Because we have documents, we have reports, we have... The committee, the House Intel Committee, confirming so much of this. The Senate criminal referral, confirming so much of this happening. And the reason you want to expedite the process of things that we have learned recently, you know, the process of the investigation itself is because this was my first question. The IG's, the inspector general is doing, you know, his report fine, because then it goes to the next step. That report then, you know, becomes a referral or whatever. And then the investigation continues. Well, why do you need to bog down the process? Shouldn't you be concerned that if there were people willing to abuse power at such great levels, if that is the case, what would your greatest concern be right now when really nothing is being done about it? Nothing's being pursued officially. You'd be concerned about those very people destroying evidence. We've asked this question about, you know, how far back could this go? We know the FISA courts and their concern going back to 2011 with the former administration. But the point being is that the longer you sit on this, the more ability they have to destroy evidence. If it's true that they were abusing power, all of these things that we have learned look very clear to me. So then an investigation would go to, you know, let's get the records. Let's get messages beyond Strzok. Let's get all of these things that we can to build a case, to learn how big this was, or to learn, at the very least, if the law was broken, and if so, who did it.
You know, one other thing that we've learned here is that when the FBI or the Democrats claim the top secrets, that if we release this information, the top secrets of the United States that will be damaging to the United States will be revealed, is a load of crap.
Mm-hmm.
that they're using that, as we saw, they're using that to hide behind, in my opinion, wrongdoing.
Right.
Because as we found out, nothing in, when the Republicans released it, there was really nothing there. Now, there was stuff redacted from the Democrats. We don't know. But when we found out, though, that the Democrats were basically saying that the reason that the FISA court judge was not told that the Hillary Clinton campaign specifically and the Democrats, the Democratic National Committee, funded the dossier was because the FISA judge, they didn't want to tell them, the FISA judge, the sources and methods. Well, that was pure crap, because that's the only reason the FISA judge exists. At that reason, you realize that it's all a load of crap.
Yeah.
They will do anything so the public doesn't know how they operate, and they will hide behind top secret classified information, can't get out to the public because it will destroy national security as their defense, when it's a load of crap.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, somebody should call them on it. Anybody call Adam Schiff on that one?
Right.
FISA judge exists to know sources and methods. That's why it's a secret court and a secret judge. Because sources and methods are used to find out whether you should tap the lines of an American citizen.
Mm-hmm. It's like watching an episode of Get Smart. Except it's really not funny, it's sad.
I haven't watched Get Smart in such a long time. I can't even remember any of the storylines, except he used to do the telephone call from the shoe or whatever. I remember.
And
that.
Of course,
the guy that hid in the garbage.
Yeah, and then the cone of silence.
Oh, the cone of silence. Oh, yes, the cone of silence.
Yep. And then, of course, the catchphrase. Missed it by that much.
Agent 99.
Don Adams.
No, Agent 99.
Remember her? Mm-hmm. She was a very capable agent.
Yeah, very capable agent.
Very capable agent. In fact, the smart one of the two agents, clearly.
Yes. 866-90-RED-EYE.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Carley, and I'm Gary McNamara. If you'd like to get in, we do have a line open, 866-90-RED-EYE. Let's go to Jack in Fort Worth, Texas, about the Department of Justice looking into a possible obstruction of justice charges against the Oakland mayor who warned the criminal illegal immigrants about an ICE raid. Hi, Jack. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show. Hello, Jack.
Yeah, thanks for taking the call. You know, it just seems to me that everything that we're talking about tonight is connected. It's the same theme. We have people wanting to take our guns or restrict gun ownership in Florida because of a reaction to a mass shooting, and yet we had failures of the FBI, failures of law enforcement that investigated this individual multiple times, and at the same time we have a mayor in Oakland who's protecting criminals. And then we have, even to take it further, the Department of Justice, that there's seemingly endless investigations with no consequences for anybody. And so we have people trying to make more laws to prevent tragedies, and we don't even enforce the laws we have. And we have some people that think that they're no better than anybody to warn illegal people in this country that certainly aren't protecting the people that voted her into office.
Right.
It's a circle that's just, I don't get it.
And if you look at, for example, the what went on between, for example, Broward County and what the federal government was attempting to do, which was to hide the reality of the criminal acts that were happening in schools.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at that, if you look at this mayor here, you have people on the left whose goal is to endanger the public. I mean, that's their goal. I mean, yeah. It's not accidental. It's not slipping through the cracks. That is the policy that they wish to have. They wish to have policies that endanger American citizens. And it's just, and I think that, you know, when you have CNN, for example, Jake Tapper bringing that up, for example, with the, you know, with the sheriff, at least the fact is, you know, that the left even understands what's going on. They may not want to do anything again about it, but at least they understand. At least the knowledge is there. If Jake Tapper's talking about it on CNN, then they know it's there.
Yeah. Yeah. And the question is now, as a public, how much longer do we tolerate these insane policies that endanger lives? Sanctuary cities, Broward County, look at the number of, and it's all done out of what? A sense of fairness, equality. We want to show that we care. Yeah, Mayor, you care more about MS-13 than you do the people who elected you. You can't dispute that. That's the honest truth. Period. Here's your forecast.
Weather concerns today continue to focus on the lower Mississippi and Tennessee River valleys as more rain is forecast, which of course is going to not help the flooding situation in that neck of the woods. There's a severe weather risk in portions of the southern plains and lower Mississippi Valley. The primary threat would be damaging winds, possible tornadoes in that region as well. Several days of elevated to critical fire weather is expected in the southern plains. As we move into late Thursday night into Friday, look for New York, New Jersey, areas of the northeast to be in for a nasty storm. The prediction as that system moves from the south into the northeast and clashes with cold air out of Canada, we'll see rain possibly transitioning to snow, heavy at times. If you have travel plans later tonight into Friday in the Northeast, you'll want to stay aware of that system. And there is a look at your national weather forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Thanks so much, John. If you'd like to get in, the line is open, 866-90-RED-EYE.
Now, more intrigue and suspense on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Hurley, and I'm Gary McNamara. You know, to show you where the left stands today, you know, we've had a variety of different issues. You know, we've talked about, you can't understand. I mean, for example, the sanctuary cities, you can't understand. We can't for the life of us. And we talked about the programs when the Obama administration, you know, was encouraging it for school districts to hide the reality of criminal activity that was going on in schools in order to make it more equitable. So there's equity in the number of arrests. So we can make it seem like that across the demographics that, you know, equally that justice is being applied. And what you were actually doing is this wasn't about justice. It was about fudging the stats.
Right.
That's all it was doing. It was pretending that things weren't going on, so the statistics verified what you wanted it, you know, wanted it to be. It was all about imagery, and we said it at the time. And, you know, we can't understand things like this. We're like, no, you need to address the problem. And in the criminal justice system, I don't care, you know, what the situation may be, but when people start committing crimes, you have to deal with that in the criminal justice system on an individual basis. If we have social program, if we have social problems outside of it, you don't solve it by pretending that the crime doesn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's another thing that we don't understand. And this is, we've covered this for the longest time, but it has advanced now and taken another step. And this is, you know, the transgender activists, which have now become the trans racial activists. And now the LGBTQ is now defending trans racialism. And this goes to Tucker Carlson on his show, where he had LGBTQ activist Mark Perpura on, and they were discussing, this was last night, the new proposal in Delaware that would allow children, through the assistance of their school, to change their gender or race.
Yeah.
Or race now, without forming the child's parents. You know, I wonder, Here's a question I have for you. Mm-hmm. We discuss it. Do liberal shows discuss this?
Somebody's talking about it if it gets to the point of being, policy, right?
Do they debate it?
Right.
Do liberal, there aren't a ton of liberal radio talk shows, but do liberal radio talk shows and do liberals does anybody debate this? Is anybody on the left stating, because we know there are.
You mean, is there anyone on the left that does not want, thinks this policy is insane as it is?
Not the policy, but just the concept of, what the transgender activists are, are basically promoting, the fact that. That if you believe you're a man and you believe you're a woman, then you really are a woman.
Right.
To the point, as we saw what happened at Portland State, where the evolutionary biologist was on there and said, look, there are biological differences between men and women. Mm-hmm. They're different. And started going through the evolutionary biology of it. And students were walking out. They had to call security. The students were saying, we can't listen to a Nazi like this who was saying, this is about the physical characteristics and the physical. There are obviously physical differences between men and women.
Mm-hmm.
You can't even say that. You have to deny reality. And so now you've got the transgender activists moving to transracial, where now a student can state, well, I'm black. Well, you're not black. You're white. No, I'm black. I wish to be black. Now, there's got to be some pushback. We know with the transgender activists there is some pushback coming, at least from old school feminists. Mm-hmm. On it, but not a lot. It's like, okay, think about this. Feminism was destroyed by men who wish to be women.
Mm.
Imagine that headline 40 years ago. Who would have believed this?
Mm.
Feminism's going to die because men who claim they're women are going to destroy feminism, and feminists will be afraid to fight back. Feminists will be afraid to fight back men who claim they're women. Wow. And now what you got, the civil rights movement, as we said, will the civil rights movement fight people who wish to be whatever race they wish to be, which then destroys the civil rights movement, as we've said before, mm-hmm. just like the transgender activists will eventually destroy the, feminism in this country. So feminism and the civil rights movement will be destroyed from within the left.
Yes.
As we have predicted.
But remember, those who Dianne Feinstein is too far right.
So is
Nancy.
The article from that in the Sacramento Bee yesterday, yeah. The op-ed piece that Nancy Pelosi is the right winger in her primary.
If Feinstein and Nancy are being shunned,
right?
This is exactly where we said at election time in 2016, the day after the election, we said, look, this is where this goes, because what happens? Well, you need a new group of victims.
And
when you do that, you destroy the old groups, right?
Mm-hmm.
Including everything, all the protected groups from the Civil Rights Act. No. That's all gone, because anyone can belong to any group, which means there are no protected groups.
Now, I want to play this audio cut here from Tucker Carlson with this Mr. Papara from the LGBTQ group that is promoting and believing what they're doing, for example, in the state of this is Delaware, the new proposal where kids can say, oh, I'm this race or I'm this sex. And if the parents don't agree, the school can say, sorry, you don't have a say in it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they get into the point of no parents, do parents have the say or not? But watch how he won't answer any question, or he just denies reality completely, which you wonder. Is there any, we've asked this question before, is there any type of consistency of thought in the liberal mind today? And just listen to this, you will become frustrated with this interview, but then again, that's the point.
Why are they not required to tell parents immediately?
Sure, Tucker. The simple fact is that some parents are simply not going to be supportive of their child, and it may endanger the child's safety or well-being to involve that parent
Who makes that decision? Who makes that decision?
Well, the school would make the decision, but I think what's missing here is that...
What's missing here is outrage, so let me supply some. The school has no right to take away parental decision-making from parents. The children do not belong to school administrators. They are members of the family from which they came. How dare a school take that prerogative away from parents? Where do they get the right to do that?
Tucker, Tucker, they're not taking the prerogative away from parents.
Well, obviously they are.
First of all, it's only in rare circumstances.
Okay, I want to address that right there. Of course they're taking the prerogative away from the parents. He denies it, and then he goes on to say, well, only in limited circumstances. Well, that was the entire point. All right, now we'll continue. I'll try to calm down here. Okay, I'll try to mellow out here.
Is that a school would come to a determination that involving the parent is going to endanger the safety and well-being of the child.
But who has the right to decide that? Hold on. Wait, slow down. Who has the right to decide that, and where does that right come from? Where does the school administrator have the right to override parental judgment in the case of a child?
Tucker, it's not about overriding parental judgment.
Well, of course it is.
No, it's about protecting the safety and well-being of that child.
Says who on the basis
of
what? Hold on. This is it. Hold on. Slow down. I'm a parent. Oh, wait, stop. I'm a parent of four. I can tell you the most sacrosanct right you have as a parent is to influence the development of your child. In order to violate that right, you need a court order. But you're saying that a school official can just decide it's not in the child's interest, and I'm asking you where you get the right to violate millennia of sacred tradition and make that decision in place of a parent. Simple question. Where's that right come from?
Tucker, the child has a right to dignity and respect in school, and they shouldn't have to choose between that dignity and respect and being unsafe at home. Being subject to potential physical violence, mental anguish.
But somebody has to make the decision about, hold on, somebody has to make the decision. There's a subjective decision to be made about what's best for the child. And that decision is always made by parents unless a court determines that the parents are unable to make the right decision. It takes a court to do that. Yes.
We send children to schools and administrators and teachers make those decisions every day.
About what race and sex the child is? Are you joking?
This has never been
tried in any place in the world.
Tucker,
and for you to pretend
Tucker,
it's no big deal and that nobody's rights are getting violated, yes, they are. Parental rights are being ignored because of political extremists, I hate to put you in that category, who think their views are more important than the rights of parents. And I think we should at least acknowledge
that. This regulation is similar to policies that have been implemented across the country in Oregon and Washington and Massachusetts.
Oh, going back like about 6 months. This has never happened in human history.
So you see where the conversation goes.
Well, it is, again, that idea when you start on that false premise, everything sounds logical. We want to protect the children. That's the idea, right? We want to protect the children from abuse at home. Hold on. First, it has to be determined that there is abuse going on. When he talks about potential abuse, if you allow the schools to make a decision without the parents for that child, based on this idea of potential abuse, well, where could you not make that case? Potential abuse? What do you mean potential abuse? That's like a pre-crime. Oh, well, they might. Well, it could. It might happen.
Well,
no, it has to be, as Carlson points out, that has to be determined first. If there's abuse going on in the home, then other adults can intervene.
If my child says to me, I don't have a child, but hypothetically, if I had a child, and my child said to me, Dad...
I'll lend you one this weekend if you want to babysit.
Dad, I am Asian.
Right.
And I am going to now identify as an Asian. I'd say, well, no, you're not, an Asian. And you're not going to identify in school as that. So he goes to school, and the school says, no, you have no right. He can identify as an Asian. Well, I'm going to a court. Because as far as I'm concerned, the school district is enabling my son's delusions.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's actually what it is.
Mm-hmm.
At that point, my son, if he said that to me, would be delusional. And therefore, I would wish if the school district came in and enabled other adults, enabled his delusions and kept me out of it, that's where I would go to court at that particular point. And that's what they're trying to pass in the Delaware, where, well, you can't go to court because the court would be the final, give you the final arbitration on that. I don't think so.
No, because here's what's happened, too, is that you're making a legal decision for my child. I'm the guardian of that child.
Right.
You don't get to make that decision. There is no power given to you to make that decision unless that power is taken from me or I relinquish that power legally first. So that power could be taken from me if, I don't know, there's an investigation after allegations of abuse and it's found that that child is in danger in that home. But guess what? That child's probably not going to stay in that school district either, because often that child, if they're taken into custody, the CPS takes custody of that child, then they're moved, you know, away. And sometimes it's a family member or anything else. But until you can show, demonstrate that those parents are abusive, you don't get to make legal decisions for my children, period.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Harley. I'm Gary McNamara. I have to ask this question. I've asked it in the past, sort of a rhetorical question. Mm-hmm. But we've talked about the transgender activist, liberal transgender activist movement in this country and the success that it had. Remember, you had corporations stating, "Well, and NCAA and other sporting events won't be played unless you recognized that men can use a girl's bathroom
mm-hmm.
if they wish to." I mean, that in some way, had some success as a liberal civil rights issue, which, of course, is just absurd and bizarre. But does it stop with transracial? Is this where they jumped the shark? Have they gone? I don't know if using that Happy Days analogy is the right thing, but have they gone too far? By will the left accept, as they seem to be in Delaware? But will that go across the nation where even the Democratic Party will embrace transracialism the same way that they have embraced transgender activism? Or will there just be too much pushback from minorities stating, "Sorry, you've gone too far now"?
Well, part of that pushback on transgender was, as you mentioned, from the feminist. I'm not sure how much of an effect that had, because my question is, for the liberal of yesteryear, it was about, it was about, in
right.
part.
We're in March now.
Yeah, right.
Transracialism
that
is accepted so completely now.
February 28th.
Right.
That was hours ago. But the thing is that you're looking to create the new protected class, which then in this case destroys all the other protected classes.
Right.
You're so Dianne Feinstein.
That's right. Yeah. February.
Yeah.
Dianne Feinstein.
So I don't think so. I mean,
you don't think that they've gone too far, even with Democrats on the far left, transracialism?
No, I really don't think so at this point. I'm not convinced that they have.
You might have been yesterday, but not today, because we're in
right.
March now.
Keep in mind, some of those blue voters that voted for Trump, I think this is part of that, and that trend will continue, but for the far left, not much.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.